beginning of the genocide and tried to get them 3 months of medication. And pinkwashing pretends like those people don't exist when we need to be in solidarity with them and protect them. And I hope, if anything from our story, LGBTQ people around the world will see ES and see that there are queer people there and will want to help their queer siblings.
We just have 30 seconds, Professor Thrasher, but an update from you on where you stand at Northwestern as a professor at the McGill School, at the Medill School of Journalism.
I can't say anything publicly now. I hope I can soon, but I'm very happy with the direction things are going. I hope to be teaching again very soon. And I hope to have more news for you soon. But I'm feeling good about where things are going, and I really appreciate all the support people watching Democracy Now! From around the world have shown me during this difficult time.
Stephen Thrasher, I want to thank you for being with us from Chicago, a professor at the Medill School of Journalism, focusing on social justice at Northwestern University, co-author with Afif Nazouli of the Intercept piece, Surviving War and HIV, Queer HIV Positive and Running Out of Medication in Gaza. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO. Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of solutions that are presented to us that at first glance look kind of good because they have the words green or renewable in them. But then when you dig into them more deeply, it turns out that not only are they a waste of precious time, but they actually are climate solutions that are worse for the climate. It's like chasing chimeras, a beast from Greek mythology, which sounds fabulous but ends up to be a fanciful illusion.
Chasing Chimeras, the Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a new documentary by veteran producer Barbara Bernstein, premieres on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. Tune into Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or 91.9 FM Hood River, or anywhere in the world streaming online at kboo.fm. That's Chasing Chimeras, the Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland police officer who lied about an alt-right meme and a training slideshow won't be fired.
Portland City Council introduces new evening meetings.
And in international news, Israel and Hamas agree to a ceasefire deal starting Sunday.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 15th, 2025. I'm Luna Winchester.
And I'm Hannah Francis. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson says all city managers and supervisors must return to the office full-time by April. The mandate affects around 700 city employees, about a tenth of the city's workforce. It does not affect non-managerial staff currently working hybrid, most of whom are union members. Managerial staff are not unionized. The city is in ongoing negotiations with three labor unions, including AFSCME, Local 189, which is the largest, representing 1,100 employees. Wilson said in his email, quote, "I'm committed to a culture of excellence, and working face-to-face cultivates the collaboration, camaraderie, and innovation our city deserves," end quote. He also said that he did not anticipate making any further policy changes for non-managerial staff in 2025. Multnomah County District Attorney Nathan Vasquez put out a similar requirement today, saying managers need to be working from the office full-time by February 3rd. It only impacts around 30 people, many of whom were already working most of their hours in office. It applies to supervisors working at the courthouse and Justice Center, the Juvenile Detention Center, and the East County Courthouse in Gresham.
Portland's new city council is changing up its meeting times, making it easier for folks who work days to attend the meetings. Tonight, the city council meeting starts at 6 p.m., and Thursday's meeting will start at 2. The council will decide on asking the city to allocate more funding to allow them more staff support. This has been an ongoing issue, even before the new city councilors took office. Currently, each councilor only has one dedicated staffer, and another administrative helper is split between the offices. Councilors say their capacity to help constituents and move the work of the city forward would be expanded with more help. But the city is headed into a difficult budget crunch, and it's not clear if the funds can be spared. Also on the agenda for this evening is the committee assignments for the councilors, solidifying who will be on what committee and who will run those meetings. A live stream of the meeting is on YouTube or available at the Portland City Council's website. That's portland.gov/council/agenda.
Israel and Hamas have agreed to a ceasefire in Gaza, as well as the release of hostages taken prisoner after the October 2023 attack. So long as all the details are finalized, it will go into effect on Sunday. This follows more than 15 months of war and genocide in Gaza. The deal has three phases. First, a ceasefire will happen for 6 weeks. Israeli hostages will be released in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. Aid will be allowed in, and hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who fled the onslaught can return, and people who are wounded or sick can leave for medical treatment. The second phase is intended to end the war. Negotiations for that phase are expected to begin on February 4th. Israeli forces have killed more than 64,000 Palestinians, with more than 110,000 wounded. 90% of Gazans have been displaced by the onslaught and endured famine. Palestinians are celebrating the news of the expected ceasefire while maintaining caution until a deal is finalized. An unnamed Palestinian man told CNN that he is, quote, "filled with hope and pain" at the news. He continued, quote, "pain for all that we've lost, for our loved ones and friends and family and neighbors, and hope for the return of Gaza, for the return of our homes," end quote. Any agreement still needs to be approved by the Israeli cabinet, but that is expected shortly.
A Portland Police Bureau officer who lied about a right-wing meme in a training slideshow won't be fired, despite a recommendation to do so. At the end of December, the Police Review Board put out a report recommending the Bureau fire Sergeant Jeffrey McDaniel. He has been linked to a right-wing meme that was at the end of a training presentation on how to deal with protests and riots. The slide is an alt-right meme of a police officer in riot gear beating a man with long hair. The language used in the text across the photo is reminiscent of a biblical prayer, essentially claiming that God has put officers on earth to violently put hippies in their place. An internal investigation in 2023 named McDaniel and recommended he be fired. McDaniel repeatedly denied allegations of putting the slide into the presentation, even going so far as to say he didn't see it. When the review board referenced statements that he had made in defense of the meme in 2021, when the incident happened, he claimed to have forgotten the whole thing. The recent investigation also found a digital trail to McDaniel. The report indicated that McDaniel, quote, indicated willful and knowing omission of material facts and evasive and deceptive conduct, end quote. It was recommended from two sources that McDaniel be fired, but then Mayor Ted Wheeler and Police Chief Bob Day did not sustain the ruling, meaning McDaniel remains on the force.
Public Utility, PGE, is going to trial against the state of Oregon over 5 acres of land historically used for tribal fishing at Willamette Falls. 2 weeks ago, a district court judge denied the Confederate tribes of the Grand Ronde the right to maintain control of its fishing platform. The judge also denied PGE's argument for seizing the land. The dispute is primarily over a fishing platform that the Confederate tribes of the Grand Ronde built with permission from the Department of State Lands in 2018. Other tribes had taken issue with this allowance, saying that it denied equal tribal access to the area. PGE shares ownership of a hydroelectric plant upriver from Willamette Falls with the Confederate tribe of Warm Springs, one of the tribes who had taken issue. In 2021, PGE intervened with a request for a federal easement that would grant all federally recognized tribes access to the falls. This was not granted. This more recent request for trial is now in hopes to own the falls and control access to the falls, saying that the Grand Ronde tribe's fishing platform presents a, quote, substantial operational and public safety risk, unquote. The Confederate tribes of the Grand Ronde argued that, since they had been fishing in the area for decades, PGE likely has ulterior motives. The case is scheduled for pretrial conference in April.
The Bipartisan Policy Center has released a new report from its Youth Mental Health and Substance Use Task Force, offering recommendations on delivery system reform to support young people in Oregon and nationwide. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
The Bipartisan Policy Center has released a new report on reforming the way youth mental health services are delivered in Oregon and nationwide. Research from 2024 puts Oregon among the three states with the highest rates of mental illness in youth, combined with the least access to care. Recommendations from the Youth Mental Health and Substance Abuse Task Force include the need to grow the behavioral health workforce nationally and make it easier for providers to join insurance networks. Michelle Gazda with the Bipartisan Policy Center shares the thought process behind the recommendations.
The things that work for adults getting into care may or may not work the same for kids and their families. So part of what the task force set out to do is make sure that the recommendations were very actionable, that they can be achieved.
The report recommends that Congress fund grants up to $2 million over 3 years to create 10 regional centers focused on building the behavioral health workforce. Another recommendation is that government agencies should work together to gather better data on young people who are incarcerated and find ways to reduce youth suicide, including in jails, prisons, and after release. Gazda says during the pandemic and the couple of years before, deaths by overdose skyrocketed. However, she says the numbers have since come down, and she credits one important change.
Fortunately, during the pandemic, if there's one silver lining, it's that youth mental health has experienced a bit of a destigmatization, and folks are much more open and comfortable talking about it than they used to be. I think with youth substance use, that's not as much the case.
The task force report also recommends doing more to focus on young people with the most serious mental health needs. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The special counsel's report says Donald Trump would have been convicted for election interference. Defense Secretary's pick Pete Hegseth faces harsh questioning from Senate Democrats, and law enforcement will be increased for next week's inauguration. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
In his final report, Special Counsel Jack Smith defends his investigations into President-elect Donald Trump's election interference, saying if charged, Trump would have been convicted. But Smith says charging a candidate presented an unprecedented challenge for the Department of Justice and the courts. On social media, Trump responded that Smith is deranged. Meanwhile, Trump's controversial Secretary of Defense pick, Pete Hegseth, faces allegations of sexual misconduct. excessive drinking, and financial mismanagement. In his first Senate nomination hearing, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand pressed Hegseth on saying that women and mothers shouldn't serve in the military.
What's wrong with a mom, by the way? Once you have babies, you therefore are no longer able to be lethal? It's a silly thing to say.
In response to another question about accusations he committed sexual assault, Hegseth refused to say rape is disqualifying, but all the committee Republicans defended his character and ability. House Republicans passed legislation to ban transgender student athletes from competing in girls' sports. The Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act would amend Title IX, which prohibits sex discrimination in education programs that get federal funding. Speaker Mike Johnson says they're standing up for women.
Men are men and women are women, and men cannot become women. It's sad that we have to say that. It's a matter of biology. It's how we're made.
The bill's future in the Senate is uncertain. President Joe Biden is announcing one-time emergency payments of $770 to those impacted by the ongoing LA fires.
And I want to be clear, we're not waiting until those fires are over to start helping the victims. We're getting them help right now.
About $5 million have already gone out to the 6,000 survivors who have registered for the FEMA program. The U.S. Supreme Court has opted not to hear a lawsuit from the state of Utah alleging federal ownership of large parts of the state is unconstitutional. The decision marks a win for conservation advocates like Olivia Juarez with Green Latinos. But they say, given the Republican-dominated Congress, states will probably try again to take control of the lands and their valuable oil, gas, and timber.
We are better set up to fight against some of the biggest challenges that the Trump administration is going to pose to the American public.
Finally, police estimate 250,000 people will be in D.C. for Trump's inauguration. Metro Police Chief Pamela Smith says in a climate of increased political violence, her entire department will be present, as well as staff from agencies outside the district.
We'll be reinforced with nearly 4,000 officers from across the United States who were generous enough to raise their hands and commit their time to assist the Metropolitan Police Department.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden on what new public records reveal about the expansion oil giant Zenith plans for Portland's riverfront. At 6 p.m., it's Boom Goddess Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. And then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 35 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 44. Today in history, in 2001, Wikipedia, the free wiki content encyclopedia, is launched. Now, it's in over 300 languages and has been praised for its role in democratizing knowledge in the internet age. The quote of the day is from American civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr., born on this day in 1929. He said, quote, "The hope of a secure and livable world lies with the disciplined nonconformists who are dedicated to justice, peace, and brotherhood."
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden designated the Chuckwalla National Monument in California, located near Joshua Tree National Park. Women will hold the majority in the 2025 New Mexico legislature, with more than 50% after additional women were elected in November. Five young Native people have been chosen to represent their communities on the national stage by the Center for Native American Youth at the Aspen Institute. With more of these stories, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Natives News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden designated the Chuckwalla National Monument in California, located near Joshua Tree National Park. The area holds spiritual, historic, and cultural significance to tribes. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland joined President Biden for the signing ceremony at the White House, which was streamed online. In remarks, she talked about the importance of the administration working with tribes.
When President Biden and I first stepped into these roles, we understood fundamentally that tribes must be at the forefront of our efforts to conserve lands and waters we all depend on. Today, I'm grateful for President Biden's leadership. I'm grateful he has listened to tribes and local communities across the country and has committed our administration to conserving the places that are core to our identities and to our shared experiences.
Biden also designated the Satitla Highlands National Monument in Northern California.
This area is also sacred to many tribal nations, so who were violently forced to leave their homes. You know, they held ancient ceremonies here. They found sources of reverence and healing here, and they're preserving lands fundamental to who they are and their way of life. Folks, it's important.
Together, the monuments will protect 848,000 acres of lands. A signing ceremony was planned last week to be held in California, but it was postponed due to high winds. Tribal leaders have also been advocating for a third national monument in California to be designated before the end of President Biden's term. Women will hold the majority in the 2025 New Mexico legislature with more than 50%. More women were added after the November election. Among them is Angel Charlie.
What's new is that we're a majority female legislature now, and I think what that means is we're going to be more responsive to family issues, community-based issues, because of the experience that all of us as legislators are bringing. And I'm just looking forward to working on solutions that really impact people and families.
Charlie is Laguna, Zuni, and Navajo. The Democrat will serve in the Senate for District 30, which includes a handful of tribal nations in the state. She's a longtime advocate for women and children, including being the former executive director of the Coalition to Stop Violence Against Native Women. Her role as a state lawmaker will also include issues involving public safety and addressing violence against women.
We know in our communities what actually is going to work. And so previously, when I worked at the Coalition, we were a part of a cohort that passed the Indian Family Protection Act. And in that were solutions straight from our community, from people experiencing barriers directly, and creating law policy that addresses those. So I see that as the same thing, you know, in this new role that I'm going to have, is when we center the people who are most impacted by law, policy, and systems, but our systems are stronger for it.
Charlie is now the executive director of Illuminative, a national group working to uplift the voices and representation of Native people throughout the country. The New Mexico legislative session begins next week. Five Native young people have been chosen to represent their communities on the national stage by the Center for Native American Youth at the Aspen Institute. The Champions for Change class of 2025 represents Native nations from across the country, including Alaska and Hawaii. Their areas of focus include improving indigenous healthcare systems, environmental rights, cultural representation, and art and literacy. The program was launched in 2013 to highlight positive stories of impact from Indian country. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The meat industry's aggressive rebranding efforts, fueled by clever messaging, is aimed at cultivating consumer skepticism about sustainable plant-based alternatives. Last year, the Environmental Working Group sued poultry giant Tyson Foods. Nadia Romlagon reports.
The narrative of natural meat versus processed alternatives persists in 2025, and experts say the meat and dairy industry show no signs of backing down on its claims. Yet experts say 99% of animals raised for food in the U.S. are factory farmed in unnatural conditions and undergo processing to become meat, dairy, and eggs. Jennifer Molador with the Center for Biological Diversity says the industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on ads.
Amidst the climate crisis, there's a growing interest in healthy and sustainable food. The food industry has responded by flooding climate conferences with meat and dairy lobbyists in full force.
Research in the Canadian Journal of Cardiology found that risk factors for heart disease, such as LDL cholesterol and body weight, improved when meat was substituted with plant-based alternatives. Last year, the Environmental Working Group sued Tyson Foods, which contracts with poultry farmers in West Virginia, arguing the company has misled consumers about its efforts to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Molador says industrial meat production is one of the leading drivers of loss of biodiversity, loss of habitat, and water scarcity.
It's also making some of the environmental crises that we face far worse, including food shortages, the intensity of wildfires and floods, and it cycles back to a damaging and destructive form of producing food, particularly driven by meat and dairy.
She adds the inevitable impacts of climate change, along with other issues like bird flu, will make it increasingly difficult for the meat and dairy lobby to rebrand their way out of serious environmental and human harms. This story was produced with original reporting from Jessica Scott Reed for Sentient. This is Nadia Ramlagan for West Virginia News Service.
One comedian is using jokes to talk about climate change, despite the fact that most people think it's no laughing matter. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Climate change and comedy are not a natural pairing. But a few years ago, comedian Stuart Goldsmith started to feel depressed about climate change.
I just found that I couldn't really talk about anything else. I wasn't thinking about anything else. And as a result, I brought it on stage with me.
He began filling his routine with jokes about everything from the challenges of remembering a reusable food container to feeling smug about having a lower carbon footprint.
In comedy, we talk about the problems. The problems are the material.
Climate change can be a depressing topic.
It is so easy to feel like, oh God, you're not going to mention the climate again. My wife, bless her, she's had to put up with so many versions of me being asked about it in a social event.
But he says that talking about it as part of his show has reduced his feelings of dread, and he wants to help his audience feel empowered to find their own way to take action on climate change.
I think if we all feel as bleak and hopeless and despairing as I have sometimes felt, if people feel like that, I would like to give them some comfort and to feel better, because people who feel better and happier and more united and mobilized can take more action.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The megafires in Los Angeles are creating new challenges for groups that fight hunger, with both immediate and long-term needs to consider. Suzanne Potter reports.
Food donations are pouring in to help victims of the Los Angeles fires, to the point that donors are being asked to hold off a bit so it can all be distributed. Anti-hunger advocates caution there are still hidden needs because people who didn't directly lose their homes are still struggling. Frank Tamborello with Hunger Action LA says thousands have lost their jobs and may now have trouble feeding their families.
You have a lot of people who didn't lose their homes, but are housekeepers, maintenance workers, and others who have lost a lot of clients, and they live all over the county. So their food situation has been impacted as they've lost income.
Tamborello predicts these families will need ongoing assistance for months, long after the initial outpouring of aid dries up. In addition, some communities like Altadena and Pacific Palisades have lost their main grocery stores. Altadena lost three, as Aldi, Grocery Outlet, and Super King all burned to the ground. So people there have to travel farther to get groceries. This can be challenging for those with disabilities or those who may have lost their car or other transportation in the fires. Alba Velasquez with the Los Angeles Food Policy Council says the fire also took a toll on local agriculture.
Many farmers in the impacted regions are dealing with destroyed crops, damaged infrastructure, and loss of revenue. Additionally, air quality issues caused by the fires can have a lasting impact on crops and livestock health.
Advocates say they'll work to address these issues with policymakers as agencies begin distributing disaster aid. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now, it's time for The Point Puzzle, the weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle focuses on wordplay and an upcoming holiday.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for three words, four letters, five letters, and six letters, that all mean outside or the outside edge, and all contain the word in inside them. I accepted a number of different answers. For four letters, we had line, ring, or skin. For five letters, brink. And for six letters, fringe and margin. Our winner this week is Lynn Straney, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. MLK Day is coming up, so take two of the five words from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., rearrange the letters, and you get a class of people who might be discriminated against and a word that connects people. So again, choose two of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., rearrange the letters, and you will get a class of people who might be discriminated against and a word that connects people. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of January 13th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wonders what the next disaster will be.
The fires in L.A. won't stop. Yeah, the wind, but more critically, the drought. L.A. already has severe housing problems, and the fire season's months away. Add to that, our next president blaming the current mayor and governor for not putting the fires out, implying if he was in charge, poof, the fires would be gone. That's the compassionate, rational leadership we can expect the next 4 years. How many warnings does Gaia need to send us? The world keeps getting hotter, drier in places, flooding in others, coastlines rising. What are we to do? What better for the environment than war? Another billion people, oceans the wrong temperature and chemistry, air shortening lifespans, folks spending so much time playing with artificial intelligence, nuclear power plants are making a comeback. I might need freezing rain and a power outage to get me back to the here and now, but I need to climb back into the light. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.